happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Ann Northrup.
And I'm Maren Johns.
Hi, Maren.
If you Hello.
Tilt your camera down so we're at the same height, or yes, thank you.
Is that it?
That's right. It. Perfect. all right. Well, Maren's here for Andy again this week as we close out the year. I have construction noise outside my window, so I'm hoping you can't hear that too loudly. But this will be the last week of that, because the really exciting news is that Gay USA, after 3.5 years of COVID, is returning to the studios of Manhattan Neighborhood Network, where we can all be together. We're thrilled about it. Maren, I know you're thrilled about it, except you have to show up in the studio in a few weeks. But it's going to be terrific. We're really excited about it. We're going to be taping the show a little earlier on Wednesday. So those of you who watch us on Facebook should know that we are no longer going to be available at 2:30 p.m. Eastern live on Facebook. We will be available at 1 p.m. Eastern live on Facebook. So I see Maren's making a note of that right now.
I mean, I knew that, but I'm having a senior moment. I have to write it down.
I think that's excellent. You go right ahead and do that. I've been having senior moments all day. So that is the Gay USA news for the moment. We can't wait to see you a little earlier next week on Facebook, but at all our regular times and our regular outlets everywhere else. Nothing really changes. That's really it. But it'll look better. It's going to look really good.
The drawback for me is I've got to put pants on and proper shoes on and not run around barefoot with trackies on, you know. So can't get away with that anymore.
Don't give away all our secrets. all right. All right. Let us, I'm happy to say that it's not a huge news week. Because that means we can take our time, and it means there's nothing horrible at this moment happening in our part of the world. But here's what's going on. We will follow up on the story of the St. Louis police and how they are continuing to stonewall about beating the gay bar owner we told you about last week. And the Australian police have been condemned in a big report for negligent and hostile investigations of murders of gay men.
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Meanwhile, the Pope has expanded his mandate for blessing all of us. But the right wing is backlashing in Italy against the same-sex nativity scene.
Oh, it's really cute. Gay men are beginning to donate blood under the new U.S. liberalized rules. We'll bring you up to date on that.
And a Florida judge has hit out at Governor DeSantis saying that he lied in order to get young people denied transgender care. You know, the key word there was mutilation.
Yeah, he made it all up, but luckily the judge saw through him. In Thailand, the parliament has begun the steps to legalize same-sex marriages, and Greece says they're going to do it too, eventually.
And in entertainment news, we have a teen character coming out on General Hospital, which is the U.S.'s longest-running soap opera, I believe.
And the currently on the air, the longest, yes. Won the Daytime Emmy this year for Best Daytime Drama. And we have our London correspondent, who you may recognize, reviewing some current theater there and telling us what's coming up next.
Yes, very excited. Mystery correspondent Al Stringer in the West End. We're excited to bring him on later.
I know you are. all right. Well, let's start with actual news. Back to St. Louis, Missouri. We told you, we showed you last week the cop car crashing into the front of a gay bar and told you about how the cops then got out of the car. And when the bar owner came out to say, hey, what the hell? The cops beat them up, beat up the bar owner and handcuffed his boyfriend. So here on the left in this picture is what the cop car did to the front of the gay bar. Not very appealing. They were racing up the street, took a sudden left turn right into the gay bar. And on the right is Chad Moore, the bar owner. You can see his left eye is badly damaged and bruised, and he's got a few bruises on his cheek. And he actually is bruised all over his body. So at first, they charged the bar owner with felony assault. Who did he assault? They assaulted him, and they assaulted his bar. So the prosecutor dropped the charges down to, like, simple assault. And the community said, wait a minute, he did not assault anyone. So they're demanding, the LGBTQ community, are demanding that the charges against the bar owner be dropped. The cops are stonewalling on this. The prosecutor has not made a decision yet. The community was going to hold a big demonstration at the bar, but they had to cancel it because so many cops showed up to police the event.
Literally. I mean, the story keeps changing from the point of view of the police. One minute they're saying they swerved to avoid a dog. Then they swerved to avoid a car, which was stationary. Then there was distracted driving. Somebody said the driver was checking his phone, but nobody said was anyone driving under the influence. And Police Lieutenant Colonel Renee Kreisman says she told reporters that there was no reasonable suspicion, quote unquote. Well, not amongst them anyway, but ask us. I think there might be a little.
And in a case like this, they're supposed to test the police officers who drove erratically, drove into the bar, had a confrontation, and they just haven't. And they haven't released any body cam footage or anything else. Little bits of video have shown up of the police car speeding down the road, but they are literally, you should excuse the expression, stonewalling on this.
Yeah.
And this kind of, as we looked at our stories this week, we saw a story that we thought was in the same realm from Australia, Marin's home country, where a commission has reported on the police investigations or lack thereof of the decades of scores of gay men murdered. There is a small representation of some of those who've been murdered over the last few decades. And the commission report is actually quite stunning and heartbreaking because what they say is that the New South Wales police badly investigated 32 suspected murders of gay men, that they were, and I quote, indifferent, negligent, dismissive, and hostile, and that they must build good relations with the LGBTQ community, that they have been adversarial and unnecessarily defensive to the commission, and that they should apologize.
Yeah, this is the product of an 18-month inquiry held by the Commissioner John Snacker, and he has now released his final report. He does stop short of an apology, of making the police, the New South Wales police force, apologize, believing that that would just be, you know, have symbolic value and nothing else. But basically, he has made some recommendations in other areas. And one of the problems that initially haunted these cases, many of them were cold, was because evidence was destroyed, or whether it was physical evidence or, you know, circumstantial or anecdotal, it really wasn't treated with any gravity. And when they found out that the victim was gay or possibly part of the community, the police, of course, that's when the indifference and actual hostility came in. I mean, I remember these murders. Some of these people were quite prominent in Australia and they did make headlines, but they always ended in a sort of a dead end. The investigation ended in a dead end. One of the more notable deaths, which happened in 1993, right near where I lived, was the manager of the rock band AC/DC, who brought them quite a bit of success, Crispin Dye. He was bashed by three men and he died from his injuries. But because they stole his wallet, the police at the time basically said it was just a homicide that was motivated by robbery. They were very reluctant to investigate the idea that Crispin was very not sure of his sexuality at that point. He told his mother he everyone thought he was gay, but he wasn't sure what he was. But he did have long hair. I do remember this. So anyway, there's many of these cases. Some of the other ones, you know, the US mathematician Scott Johnson, who was pushed from a cliff. The newsreader Ross Warren, whose body has never been recovered, but his keys were found at the bottom of a cliff. Many cases like this.
Well, it is. It is both enraging, of course, and truly heartbreaking to know that we can't get justice for people like this who have been murdered, that it seems like it would be so simple to just pursue it, and yet it's not happening. And the attitudes about it are just really upsetting.
It is shocking because it all happened at a time when our community had this growth spurt. And I know we had a record number of LGBTQ publications per capita in the world in Australia at that time, which was fascinating. But look, the good news is the current New South Wales Police Commissioner is a woman. So Karen Webb has said that under her watch, this sort of culture will not continue. And wherever possible, they will reopen the cases and apply forensic evidence to whatever, you know, forensic investigation to whatever evidence they have remaining. And she has apologized herself to the families and said that it is heartbreaking for them.
Well, that's very good to hear. And I hope she's able to follow up and that the police force will take her direction and do that. Well, we'll
but a slightly better news for the police in Massachusetts, though, Anne. You followed that one, didn't you?
Great Barrington, Massachusetts, in western Massachusetts, a lovely little town. And somebody called the police department there and said, there's this pornographic book that's being, you know, read in our local school. You have to go, I don't know, arrest everybody. So the police went to the school looking for the book Gender Queer, which is maybe the most banned book in America these days. It is a cartoon book. It's animated, but it's sexually explicit in some ways. But it's a very highly regarded book, but it has been very controversial. So the police go and they find the book and they do whatever they do, but they leave and the community gets up in arms about, what do you mean you sent the police into the school? And to their great credit, the police apologized for that and said it was inappropriate of them to go to the school. And, you know, we're not policing the banning of books that way. No one's going to jail. They apologized very forthrightly, and that is done with.
I mean, it's a book. It's an inanimate object. Go find somebody to arrest, you know?
Yes, that was at a middle school in Great Barrington. So we like to give you all the stories, good and bad. All right, well, back to the Vatican and a follow-up to our other big story last week where we told you about the Pope issuing an edict that it was okay for priests to bless same-sex couples, not their relationship, heaven forbid, but them as individuals. And that actually is a great leap forward in a lot of people's eyes and very comforting to a lot of LGBTQ people who have felt entirely rejected by their church. So the update this week is that the Pope has been talking to his staff at the Vatican and says to them, don't be rigid about ideologies like the old statement that gay people are intrinsically disordered. Be a little more broad-minded. Don't be so quick to cut people off. And that is also a very important statement, I think.
Yeah. There has been some pushback, though, hasn't there? And there's been a lot of commentary about Pope Francis from the right wing religious community, that he's in fact inviting a schism into the church. But I mean, obviously I don't think he is.
Yeah,
but we've had some pushback in of course the African countries, Zambia, Malawi, Kazakhstan.
And in Ukraine, the Archbishop of Kyiv, Shevchuk, Archbishop Shevchuk there at the bottom of the screen with the beard and the black outfit, has said that the edict about blessing same-sex couples does not apply because they're a part of the Eastern Rite Catholic Church, which is a slightly different branch. Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is very pro-gay rights, has not quite gotten around to legalizing same-sex marriage yet in the middle of the war, but they're talking about it because so many gay Ukrainians have volunteered in the war and serve so valiantly. So people are noticing that. But yes, I mean, you're going to have different opinions. You're going to have a schism or schism or whatever it is. Inevitably, it's inevitable if you're going to have disagreements. And I think we've waited long enough. And I think the is making progress.
I was worried this would happen, though, the nitpicking. So he said, this guy has said, this declaration applies solely to the Latin church. You know, so we use Catholic so broadly, but you, the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, of which I actually did not know there was one, you know, is rejecting.
Well, I've always wondered why we have different religions to begin with, why and how we're supposed to honor religion when they fight among themselves in these different denominations. It seems crazy to me. But there is another little religion question going on in Italy around all this. In a little town an hour east of Naples, there was a nativity scene put up. It's quite adorable. We'll show it to you. Where if you look closely, you'll notice that the two people kneeling by the baby Jesus are not Mary and Joseph. It's two women. A mom. And this was done very deliberately to comment on diversity in the church. And you see on the right, the gentleman in the black with the multicolored scarf is the pastor there. Let's see if I can dig up his name.
Father Vitaliano della Sala.
Della Sana. Yes, he is a great fan of diversity in the church. He talks quite eloquently about all the different people in his diocese and how diverse diverse kinds of families. So he put up this nativity scene and, of course, is getting the predictable pushback on that. But we thought it was pretty cute.
Yeah, he said in our parishes, we see more and more children from the new types of families that exist and are part of our society. This is just in a village. Our children of separated and divorced people, gay couples, single people, young mothers. He's known to be very sympathetic to our community and a great supporter of Pope Francis. So, I mean, I hope there's more priests like him out there.
Oh, there are many priests like him out there. They just sometimes they have power and sometimes they don't. But we have a step back in Notre Dame, Indiana, the town of Notre Dame, where we told you last week that St. Mary's Women's Catholic College had joined the ranks of other women's Catholic colleges. In fact, the last to join in admitting trans women to the college. Well, it seems that when they announced they were doing this, they got pushback from some conservative students and from the local bishop. And they have now reversed course. They are no longer going to welcome trans women to St. Mary's College. The other seven women's college, Catholic colleges will retain their inclusive policies, but not St. Mary's, I'm sorry to say. Mm. All right. I think we have run through our religion news this week, and we will move on to sexual behavior. And that leads us inevitably to Florida.
To Florida.
Where Bridget Ziegler is up to her old ways. They have found a second videotape. This, of course, is Christian and Bridget Ziegler in this picture. You'll remember them having a threesome with a woman, and then he was accused of raping that woman by that woman. And there was word of, he said he'd videotape that encounter. Well, updates. There is a new video that shows Bridget having sexual relations with a woman. It's unclear whether it's the woman who was involved in the threesome we've talked about or is yet another woman. We haven't seen the video. No one's talking about the details of who this is, but the story continues. Meanwhile, interesting development on his part. There is the video of his sexual encounter alone with the previous threesome woman. Are you following this? has surfaced enough to potentially exonerate him from the charge of rape. Again, no final details on this yet. It is a developing story, as they say. The story that the gift that keeps on giving. He has yet to resign his position as head of the Republican Party in Florida. Bridget has yet to resign from the Sarasota School Board or the Disney Oversight Committee. And it's just keeping people in Florida entertained and horrified through the holiday season.
These people, I just don't understand how elected officials can act like this and also, you know, keep evidence of what they're doing.
Please. Incredible. Do you remember the blue dress?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
evidence everywhere. And people often, not always, often people in power feel immune from any kind of consequences of bad behavior. And, mm-hmm. you know, they say that teenagers feel immortal, but I really think it's a lot of people in power who feel immortal and therefore feel able to act in inappropriate ways. Speaking of which,
more sex tapes from the Capitol this time. We did speak of this last week, didn't we, Anne? We said that there was some dreadful pornographic barebacking going on in one of the rooms in the Capitol. And now there's rumors of, I don't think anyone's found this tape or this, we don't have any clip of it. But it's been alleged that this is not the first tape of its kind. A spokesperson for Representative Dan Newhouse, he's a Republican from Washington. He revealed that a staffer in their office had been investigated for purported inappropriate behavior. This is in June 2022, a video featuring a man touching himself in a house office building. And this video was allegedly circulated on Snapchat last year under the handle of Adam J, some A.N. Jackson, 2019. So I haven't seen the video. I didn't go looking for it, Anne, I must say.
No. Well, and you don't need to see the first one either. I have. But it's become bipartisan. Staff members for both a Democrat, Ben Cardin of Maryland, right. for the first one, and now Dan Newhouse, a Republican of Washington, have been right. reprimanded or fired for their behavior. Really, in the Capitol building, couldn't you, I don't know, maybe, I guess, being an exhibitionist is part of the thrill here, possibly.
Yes, I think so. You must be.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. all right. In other politicians behaving badly and a little more seriously, the Seattle Washington Children's Hospital is now suing Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton because Paxton's office has demanded access, there's Paxton, to records from the Seattle Children's Hospital of trans youth who have left Texas to get care in Seattle, Washington, because it's outlawed in Texas. Now, I have to admit that I do not understand the legal situation where a state attorney general can go after citizens of that state who leave the state for medical care, whether it is the woman who had to go to another state to get the abortion she needed for a bad pregnancy, or these trans kids who are leaving. Where does their jurisdiction end? Not at the state line? That's crazy.
No, and I've had, I forget which state it was, but a few months ago they were trying to find whether they could prosecute people over state lines if they, of course, returned back to the state, you know, having had these procedures that are illegal in the state of their residence. And I think a lot of this might have to do with where they end up living, residency laws, But the body, I mean, the thing is, who owns your body? I mean, this to me is unprecedented. This is women's access to abortion and other gynecological care, and transgender young people's bodies. Who owns their bodies, though? This is to me what the problem is: the state wanting to intervene in what is considered healthcare for people of those identities.
Well, their excuse is that they're protecting the unborn, or they're protecting minors, or whatever. But I can't wait to see all of this litigated, because it truly makes no sense to me. And even if you come back to the state, you haven't had the procedures in that state. So how could you be prosecuted for something that is not taking place in the original state? It just... Perhaps a viewer who understands these legal matters can explain this to me, but I just cannot grasp that a state has the right to reach across to another state in that way, to regulate what happens in that other state. It's
strange. It's like if I go to Costa Rica to have a ayahuasca ceremony and my mind is forever altered and I come home to a state at which ayahuasca is not a legal drug, do I get thrown in prison? For example.
that was quite a spontaneous example.
But, I mean, I don't have a legal brain, but I think one of the best ways of looking at these laws is to try and find analogies with other sets of circumstances. Sure. It just seems quite bizarre to me.
Well, I suspect that the offending politicians would claim that they were being protective, but just as they regulate things like tattoo situations or blood donations, which we will get to, but although that's a more of a federal question, but I agree with you. Of course, people should be free to make their own decisions, but then there are, you know, we are regulating conversion therapy on the grounds of protecting people from bad treatment, and we're all in favor of that.
Yeah. It very much is a sort of a symptom of empire, isn't it? That you can control, you can continue to control your constituents even when they're outside of your geographical bounds. It's wow. Anyway, we had some better news with Blue Cross Blue Shield Illinois. There was a ruling there from U.S. District Court Judge Robert Bryan, who's instructed Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois that they actually may not exclude gender-affirming care in any health plan. So that's a little bit of good news, isn't it, Anne?
Somehow it ended up with a federal judge in the state of Washington talking about crossing state lines. But the judge ruled that Blue Cross must follow the rules in the Affordable Care Act, in Obamacare, which are federal rules, national rules, that mandate that insurance companies cover gender-affirming care. And this was Blue Cross as an insurance company saying, we're not going to cover that. We don't want to cover it, whatever. But the judge said, and this is really quite an important fundamental ruling, that no employer can demand that an insurance company not cover trans care, because an employer might say, well, I don't want that as part of my insurance premiums. I don't want to pay for it. But the judge said, no, that's part of the Affordable Care Act. And he also said, no religious exclusions. So you cannot claim a religious exemption from these rules in the Affordable Care Act. And that's quite stunning. And he made it retroactive to when the Affordable Care Act was passed in 2014. So that's going back just about 10 years to say, you know, this, you have to provide this coverage. So if anyone was denied this coverage for gender-affirming trans care that should have been eligible for coverage by insurance companies under the Affordable Care Act, look into your legal rights in that case.
Absolutely. And just, I mean, this is groundbreaking. It's the first of its kind in this country. And it didn't just drop out of the sky, that ruling. It actually is the product of a class action lawsuit filed in Tacoma. So that, yeah, so definitely know your rights.
Yeah. All right. And in back to Florida, another judge who says that Governor DeSantis lied in order to get his no trans youth care law passed. What he talked about was genital mutilation to scare the legislature into passing the law. But as we know, genital surgery is almost, not entirely, but almost non-existent for minors. Hormone treatment, puberty blockers, yes. Surgery, no. So DeSantis lied about it, got the bill passed, and the and then people challenged the law, parents, families, and the judge has sided with them and said that DeSantis lied about it. And he's going to rule on the legality of the law itself soon. But meanwhile, he's made that observation. All right.
Yeah, it's inflammatory speech for the purpose of political gain, obviously.
Yeah.
Where to next?
As long as we're talking about trans young people, a trans male model in New York City, Francis Coombe, COOMBE, 30 years old, is suing the Muse Model Management Agency because they won't promote them as non-binary or male. This is someone who formerly identified as female, or was identified as female and modeled that way. But as their identity, knowledge of their identity evolved, they went to the model agency and said, I'm non-binary, I want you to promote me that way. And the model agency said, no, we're going to continue to promote you as a woman. So now Francis is suing the model agency.
Yeah, I mean, and this is all only happening in late 2021. And this modeling agency, I know just a little bit about them. They pleaded ignorance about any kind of gender-neutral fashion movement, which we know has been happening for at least the last 10 years. So I want to say to them, you know, where have you been in your own industry? Under a rock? I mean, catch up. Gender-neutral and gender non-binary models have been quite popular and in demand for a few years now.
At least. All right. We're going to pick up the pace a little because we are squeezing time. Sad case out of Houston, Texas, a lesbian couple, one of whom, Portia Phillips, killed her wife in the middle of an argument. Now, clearly this was a spontaneous thing because she did it with one bullet and then immediately called the cops and tried to administer CPR to save her, unfortunately to no avail. We have a local news report.
Police have just identified the woman accused of shooting her wife to death overnight.
They arrested 37-year-old Portia Phillips, and she's now charged with murder. HPD says the couple got into an argument, but they're not sure why they were fighting. This all happened just after 1 in the morning on Doris Oaks Circle near Mesa Drive in East Houston. And police tell us Phillips turned herself in immediately when they showed up. They say her wife was found dead in the bedroom with a single gunshot wound. And if you're ever in a domestic situation, there is help available. Here are two hotlines you can call. For the Houston Area Women's Center, call 713-528-2121. There's also the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That number, 800-799-7233.
It's the kind of case that's just so tragic and makes you say, if there were not a gun available, if there were not a gun in the household, this might have turned out quite differently. So we're sorry for all concerned. By the way, the Southern Poverty Law Center has issued a report naming 60-plus right-wing groups spreading false pseudoscience about LGBTQ people. If you're interested in that, check out the Southern Poverty Law Center for that report. And
they
now to the
great job.
Yes, to the sports desk. We've been talking about how the National Hockey League has been debating their pride nights and rainbow colored tape on their sticks and jerseys that they used to wear in their warm up. And then they were told not to because some of the Russian players didn't want to do pride night stuff. So the New Jersey Devils found a little way around this this year, and they wore these as arrival jerseys as they walked into the building for a game. And they are now auctioning off the jerseys signed by individual players who wore them. And this is for the benefit of the Hyacinth Foundation, which is a very longstanding HIV service provider in New Jersey. So congratulations to the Devils for that. And in the NFL, Robert Kraft and the Patriots football team, which he owns and which could use all the good publicity it can get this year, is promoting the National Gay Flag Football League. They made a little minute and a half PSA kind of thing that they're running on the CBS NFL pregame show. The Gay Flag Football League has been in existence for years, and a number of NFL teams support their local gay flag football teams. But this is the first involvement of CBS and the video. The video is a little obscure for my taste. It never says gay. It talks about inclusion and diversity, but it does put up the logo for the league. So, you know, baby steps. And we're sorry to note the death of Matt Napolitano, who was a sports caster for sports reporter for the Fox Sports Network. That's him on the right marrying his husband, Ricky Whitcomb, just 7 months ago. Matt had a longstanding autoimmune disease, and an infection related to that is the cause of his death at the tragic age of 33. And while it doesn't quite fit with the mood, it fits with our new attempt to bring game shows into every Gay USA broadcast. He was a contestant on Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, pretty successful at both, and evidently a great guy who will be greatly missed. A shocking death at that age.
Just a reminder, a lot of gay people work for Fox. It's always good. Infiltrating. We're infiltrating.
Anyone in particular you have in mind, Lauren? Only in a news capacity, I believe.
That's right.
All right. Moving on to other international news. In Greece, let's start in Thailand. Thailand is making concrete steps towards legalizing same-sex marriage. They have been forecasting this for a while, and this week the parliament approved four preliminary bills that will lead to marriage in 2024, probably. And the thing that struck me about this was that I don't know where this poll came from, but 96.6% of the general public in Thailand supports same-sex marriage.
You know why? Because, look, they're Buddhists. It's a 90% Buddhist nation. There were only 11 out of 380 lawmakers that were holdouts. I mean, that's fantastic on that lower house vote. But it is, you know, I interviewed a transgender Miss Universe contestant from Thailand, and I did ask her, I said, how come everyone I've ever met from Thailand is just so beautiful and so kind and so gentle and tolerant? And she said, because we're Buddhist, we believe that you have to treat people, you have to give people the same rights as you would want for yourself, because if you don't, obviously, these are the people that invented karma in a way, or a version of karma that we understand. It comes back to you. And I think that the conscience of the nation here will probably really, it'll get it through, making this country, Thailand, will be the third Asian nation after Nepal and Taiwan.
Yes, very exciting. Meanwhile, in Greece, the center-right government, not Buddhists, have reaffirmed their promise to legalize same-sex marriage in the current term of parliament, which runs to 2027. So don't hold your breath. They have.
No, I think things do move at a slower pace in across Greece. We have heard the rumors of that, but it would be wonderful if they did pursue it, and especially since the country has been sort of struggling for so long and economically and whatnot.
And they have a very strong Orthodox church there, which is not happy about this and is going to fight it every inch of the way. But
look what gay marriage, I just call it gay marriage, but look what same-sex marriage did to the U.S. There's absolute reports that said economic prosperity is just a given. It follows. And, you know, Greece, every time we've heard of Greece recently, it's because they're in the doldrums. I mean, they're broke, right? So this would be great.
And imagine what a destination it would be for weddings and honeymoons. But the prime minister, is it prime minister or president? I think prime minister anyway. Kyriakos Mitsotakis, I'm bungling that. There he is in favor of this and promising to make it happen. We will follow that. All right. And I'm very happy to see that Maurice Tomlinson of Jamaica, who has been the legendary activist for getting rid of sodomy laws in Jamaica and pushing forward rights for LGBTQ people, moved to Canada a few years ago and said, I just can't take it anymore and I'm getting out of this fight. His energy has been renewed. He is re-upping in the fight against sodomy laws in Jamaica, and he is going to take the question to the UK Privy Council, which in this day and age is still ruling former British territories, I guess you would call them, on these matters. We had to take Bermuda's marriage law to the Privy Council. I use that we advisedly. But that worked for Bermuda. But now we'll see whether the Privy Council will legalize gay people in Jamaica. Mm. That delightful. But thank you to Maurice for unretiring. Bad story from Russia, where there's talk of, you know, they pass these laws, just get more and more draconian. And you kind of think, oh, another law in Russia, whatever. They're just trying to get Putin popular again. But they have real consequences. And parents are now reportedly having thugs kidnap their LGBTQ kids and take them to conversion therapy, assaulting them violently in the process. Some of those young people are fleeing the country, and this in the face of an LGBTQ aid group having to close its doors in Russia because of these new laws. It's just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, these places are like cross between rehab centers and jails, basically. And the only other time I heard of something like this was out of the United Arab Emirates, where some very wealthy Saudis were bringing goons over to the US to kidnap their transgender daughter and bring them, you know, trick them to come home. And then when they come home, they're locked up and tried to be, deprogrammed. That's quite terrifying.
Let me just run through a couple of things quickly because we are going to get short on time and we want to bring in our London correspondent. Backwards move in Madrid, Spain, where the local legislature there is rolling back LGBTQ laws, no more non-discrimination law, and no punishment for beating up gay people. This is a protest in the gallery of the parliament by the LGBTQ community, showing their colors and standing up to it. And there they are again with the symbolic blood on their hands, complaining to the parliament. Good news from Ontario, Canada, where a court says that the term groomer is a slur and not protected speech, and a drag performer can sue for defamation for someone using that against them. And interesting news from Wales, where the Stonewall Group there has aggregated some census figures and studies and found that 34% of the population has some portion of same-sex attraction possibilities. And I wanted to just bring you a little picture from Seattle of a gay man there donating blood for the first time. He's an employee of Bloodworks Northwest. The U.S. liberalized the rules, so they're now concentrating on sexual behavior rather than orientation for who gets to donate. So check out your local blood donation center to see if you are eligible, if they're playing by the new rules. And if they're not, tell them it's time for them to change. But I think we should bring in our London correspondent.
Yay! I'm so surprised it's you. It's like the masked singer. You should have been wearing a disguise. All right.
How are you?
Hi, Andy. Well, it's Andy Hum.
It's nice to be here with you from Camden Town. The big news, the big theater news over here, I'm going to talk about some shows, but is that the new director of the National Theater is going to be a woman and a person of color. This is after 60 years since Laurence Olivier founded it in 63. Her name is Indhu Wubisingham.
Congratulations to her and to the theater.
But the theme of the three shows that I saw at the National Theater under Rufus Norris, who will be finishing up next year, was in various ways female trouble. Starting with a musical of Roald Dahl's The Witches, about a coven of witches determined to turn all the children of Britain. You got the picture of these witches there? There they are. They're determined to turn all the children of Britain into mice. And next picture, starting with these two at a resort hotel, this is played by, Sean Eagle Service there on the left and Bertie Kaplan on the right. These are two of the most amazing child performers I have ever seen in my life. It's a great musical. It, in the tradition of Matilda, I think it's going to come to Broadway eventually, and it's fun for all ages. Now, darker still is The House of Bernarda Alba. That's the play that Federico Garcia Lorca wrote in 1936, just before being murdered by the reactionary Franco forces for being a leftist and gay. So it's a new version by Alice Birch, starring there Harriet Walter as Bernarda, on the day of her husband's funeral, telling her grown daughters that they will now mourn for 8 years and not leave the house. So it looks like a prison, and it is a prison. And, it's a trial, but a reminder that the wages of repression are death. And not much let up, also at the National Theater, Annie Baker's play Infinite Life, about six people at a chronic pain clinic, five women and one guy, trading ailments. That's the entire set, these chaise lounges for 2 hours. It can be humorous and at times, but mostly pretty grim. but it's also a good reminder of our own mortality. All right. At the smaller Kiln Theater that into Ruby Singham runs now, the play is called, let me get it here.
Two Strangers?
Two Strangers Carry a Cake Across New York. Now, it stars their bouncy Sam Tutty, who was the star of Dear Evan Hansen in London, and Dujana Gift, star of Hamilton. It's a preposterous plot, but decent songs and very good performances. All right, now the gay plays. Backstairs Billy.
Is that a double entendre, Andy?
Huh?
Is that a double entendre?
No, that's his title. He's the something of the backstairs at Clarence House. So it stars Luke Evans there on the right as Billy Talon, the longtime servant of the Queen Mother, played by Penelope Wilton. You'll recognize her from so many things, including Downton Abbey. It's a boulevard comedy, but the boulevard is the Mall where sits Clarence House, where the Queen Mother resided for like 50-something years. It succeeds as a comedy and as a commentary on evolving attitudes towards homosexuality from the 1950s to the 21st century. All those shows are still running. And this one, by the way, was by Marcelo Dos Santos. I've not been familiar with him, but he also wrote the last show that I'm going to tell you about, which is closed now. Bring up the picture there. That's Marcelo in the middle there. He's the playwright and the director. Matthew Gia is on the right, but the one-man show is by Samuel Barnett. You'll remember him maybe from the History Boys. It's about a 36-year-old gay man who has never been in a serious relationship. It's called Feeling Afraid as If Something Terrible is Going to Happen. he's still trying to get into a relationship. The opening line does pique your interest. I'm a comedian, and I'm about to kill my boyfriend. But don't worry, it's funny. So the other big hits here, if you're coming over, Sunset Boulevard at the Savoy just opened. Stranger Things at the Phoenix. Guys and Dolls is still running at the Bridge. And coming up for this year, if you're taking a trip, Long Day's Journey Into Night with Brian Cox and Patricia Clarkson. And Ian McKellen is going to be Falstaff in Player Kings at the Noel Coward in April. So have fun. Have a good trip.
And Andy, you're going to come back to the M&N Studios, not to doing this from your bedroom anymore. We have a spanking new studio to go into next week.
Not from my friend Bernard Lynch and Billy Desmond's house here in Camden.
Well, we're comfortable anywhere. Thank you for all of that. We'll see you next week. All right, and congratulations to General Hospital for winning the 2023 Daytime Emmy Award for Best Drama Series, and including a young star. The character's name is Aiden, who has come out on the show. Now, here's my question. 4 years ago, his family was talking about this. He was 8, the character was, at the time. Does that mean that he is now coming out at age 12 on this show? Or is it like soap opera time where they skip time periods and someone who is 8 is now 18 after 4 years?
I actually don't know. And I mean, how old's suitable enough to have your first little kind of boyfriend when he says, oh, actually, you know, the mother says, oh, they sound really nice. And then he says, actually, his name is Tobias, you know. So maybe if they're like 13 or 14, it might be okay. But I don't know about 12. I mean, you know, didn't we all have little boyfriend girlfriends when we were 12? I think we did. Didn't we run around with little people?
Sort of. No, my story is that I have a great regret for not dating girls in high school or middle school or elementary school or whatever. It took me longer, and I think of all those wasted years. But the character, Aiden, is, for those of you who are really old, is the grandson of the legendary Luke and Laura on General Hospital, who were quite the famous couple. So he is now evolving there. A little news from Hollywood, where Cate Blanchett and USC, the University of Southern California, have started a program and a fund to help women and gender diverse filmmakers. They're going to give them money. They're going to give them a lot of mentorship. They're going to give them exposure. And Kate Blanchett's statement is, homogeneity is the death of progress and innovation. And I think that's so true and so applicable across the board.
And she's terrific. She's really outspoken. She's got that, you probably know it from me, the Aussie, we were born without filters, you know, we just say what we think. But this light bulb moment for her came when she walked onto a set just recently. And not only was she the only woman in front of the camera, she was the only woman behind the camera. And she said that made her very, very disappointed. And so she swung into action and done something about it. So good on you, Kate.
Well, it's interesting because to me, it also applies to the whole migration argument and issue and how much the United States is committing its own kind of suicide by not welcoming diverse populations into this country, as it has in the past. And it has enriched this country no end and driven the ambitions, the successes, the innovation across the board. And once we shut those borders and say, sorry, we don't want any of that anymore, we're going to die a slow death. So I think this kind of attitude of welcoming diversity and regeneration is very important in so many areas of our lives.
Quickly, I think we've got Kristen Stewart bringing her lesbian best again to cinema. She has a feature film coming out called Love Lies Bleeding about a woman who falls in love with a female bodybuilder. And what a mullet she's got. She's got this fabulous mullet haircut.
You can barely see her. Her on the right and the bodybuilder on the left.
It looks like a kind of a gangster caper, semi-violent kind of thing, but I really do like how she's starting to center gay experience to that Netflix show, Living for the Dead, about gay ghost hunters. She's doing her thing.
And she's also got a movie called Love Me coming out that is a post-apocalyptic love story. Where have the rom-coms gone? But she will be at Sundance at the opening night gala receiving the Visionary Award. And I am happy for her for that. Also, there's a very fascinating article in the Huffington Post written by a guy, Peter Napolitano, who talks about his relationship with a guy named Tommy Cothran, who died of AIDS many years ago. And he shared that relationship with Leonard Bernstein. So he's writing about the missing parts of the Maestro movie and how it inappropriately de-emphasized Bernstein's gay life. It's not missing entirely, but there could have been a lot more. Yeah. So check that out in the Huffington Post. Well, Maren, it has been a treat to have you here. You'll be back in a few weeks, and we'll all be back in the studio next week. Remember, 1 o'clock live on Facebook, 1 o'clock Eastern. Happy New Year, we hope. It's going to be a mess.
Happy New Year to everyone, all of viewers, and thanks for supporting us this year. I've really appreciated it.
And see you next year.